The next case on the en banc calendar is Clark County School District versus McConney K. Pale. Is that correctly pronounced?
Yes.
All right. Number 68443, as you can see, Chief Justice Perry-Gary is in Carson City participating in this matter by video. So, counsel, are you ready to proceed, Mr. O'Brien? Okay, go ahead, sir.
Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, Counsel. My name is Daniel O'Brien. I have the privilege of representing the Clark County School District. In this appeal, we are asking the court to expound upon the duty owed by a public school when a student is injured in a PE class as a result of encountering a risk that is inherent in the sport under instruction. We also ask the court to affirm its prior decisions that hold that a parent has the exclusive right to recover medical expenses incurred on behalf of the minor. Finally, we ask the court to reverse the award of future medical expenses, which was not supported by any medical testimony, let alone expert testimony, within a reasonable degree of medical probability. 12 years ago, 11-year-old McConney Kai Pao was injured while playing floor hockey at Woodbury Elementary School in the PE class.
Was this a compulsory activity of the elementary school, this field hockey class?
In order to get a grade, you had to participate, yes.
Okay, so the child had no choice whether or not to participate.
Although exceptions were made on occasion, generally no.
Okay.
There was no exception in this case. The accident occurred when both players went for the puck or the ball at the same time. And the undisputed facts in this case, which are important to understand, are that, first of all, the injury was accidental. There's no claim that this was retaliation for some prior aggressive play or that there's any animosity between the players. There have been no prior close calls, nothing like that. The contact between the player and players was entirely unintentional. It was also undisputed that the accident occurred suddenly, that so quickly, in fact, that McConney admitted that there wasn't anything that Mr. Peterson, the teacher, could have done, even if he was standing right there. It happened that quickly. And finally, it is undisputed that getting hit by a hockey stick while playing floor hockey is a risk that's inherent in the sport of floor hockey. Judge Hardy, in fact, made such a ruling, but then he declined to enforce it, and he declined to instruct the jury on that.
You're talking about a risk. If we have such a risk, is that something that the parents should have been noticed of and had the opportunity to consent to or not consent to their child being involved in something like that?
Your Honor, asking the parents to consent to every single thing that the district does would involve having the parents there all the time.
Well, for a number of athletic events, parents are required to give consent for the child to participate.
So
I ask this question because of whether or not this activity without protective gear, if in fact it's needed, is dangerous.
No, Your Honor. And that's a specific, when we talked about, and in my brief we talked about it, but we argued, we put on evidence about how this course was adopted.
And it was concerned with that, and one of the things that did bother me in that, it said they made a decision. And one of the factors they made the decision was based upon financial considerations, not necessarily safety.
Absolutely. Every decision that's made is made based on, in part, financial considerations.
And so it concerns me that the safety of a child is measured in dollars, not their ultimate safety for the pupils that the school district is entrusted with.
Not at all, Your Honor. The district and ultimately the Department of Education has to weigh the risk versus the cost. That is something that's entrusted to their discretion. They have to make this decision. They made a determination that this was a low-risk activity, and they did not allocate any funds for safety equipment. They did not impose any requirements for safety equipment. Floor hockey is no different than any other class. You can get hurt running around the track, and I mean seriously hurt, and it happens.
Well, let me ask you this. Hale had argued that the floor hockey rules essentially mirror intramural collegiate floor hockey rules, and waivers are required there, or safety equipment is required there. How do you address that?
Well, first of all, the Rice University rules were never adopted by anybody but Rice, and they were adopted after this accident happened. That set forth right in the rules that was produced.
Okay.
And there was no testimony, no expert testimony, or any other kind of testimony that these rules apply in the middle school setting, or that they apply anywhere but at Rice University. Council tried to argue that this was some sort of universal standard, but there was no evidence that anybody adopted these rules other than Rice University. Had there been an expert to say this is required, that's a little different. We would have had to address that. But just to, the reason these rules even were found, our risk management part, Eileen Whelan, was investigating for hockey. She didn't know anything about it. So she went online and looked for rules. And she found these rules and at least gave her some idea what floor hockey was all about. So she copied that, put it in her file. Now, when we produce our records in a civil case, we produce our entire risk management file. Plaintiffs seized on these and decided, well, these must be the rules that apply. And you violated these rules, and look what they did. And the other aspect of that is, no waiver would have prevented this injury. No waiver would have prevented this injury. All it would have done was change the argument from inherent risk doctrine to express assumption of the risk. That's all it would have done. We're talking about a doctrine that has been adopted, the purpose of which is to avoid chilling vigorous participation in and sponsorship of recreational activities by imposing a duty to eliminate or reduce the risk of harm inherent in those activities.
Let me ask you this, as you just addressed the express assumption of risk, and there was no waiver, so this wasn't an express assumption of risk, turning to an implied assumption of risk, doesn't that require a voluntary exposure to a danger and an actual knowledge of the risk assumed? And you had just indicated earlier that this was a required course for these students, is that correct?
It wasn't required that they take that PE class, but if you were enrolled in that PE class, you were required to play floor hockey. In fact, this was the second or third time through the rotation. This was the end of the year. This was, according to Mr. Peterson, the second or third time they had played they participated in this activity.
And how do you address the actual knowledge of the risk assumed? What's your argument there?
The case law that we have cited point out that it's not in a typical express assumption of the risk case, what is involved in an inherent risk doctrine is an analysis of the sport itself, the risks that are inherent in the sport. And the cases have held that that if the risk is inherent, there's no duty to take action to ameliorate those risks. And this isn't just floor hockey. I have to reiterate that there's no activity that we have in any PE class that doesn't have some risk of serious injury. And if the school district, and not just our school district, this will apply statewide, it's going to be held to a standard that anybody who gets injured in PE were automatically at fault if it was possible for them to get hurt. That's strict liability. And that's what this court would be imposing. This court would, in fact, be discouraging innovation in providing court different courses. The policy of applying the inherent risk doctrine is nowhere better served than in a public school where providing exciting, new, diverse, and challenging physical education class that serves the salutary purpose of keeping students interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle. We all know, we've all seen in the press and the news, anywhere you go, that there's an obesity problem in this country. If you tell the school district, not just this school district, but all the school districts in this state, you can't do this unless you've got enough money to make sure that they can't possibly get hurt, then you'll be discouraging that policy. You'll be discouraging schools from doing anything but offering courses that involve sitting still and not moving and where you can't come in contact with other players.
Could you, Mr. Brown, could you talk about the damages issue, both past special damages and future special damage issues?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In this case, the award was, McConney was awarded $48,288.06 for past medical expenses. All of those expenses were incurred while he was a minor. He had no treatment at all after 2007.
He went one visit with a doctor for litigation purposes the day before his deposition. No treatment was provided. All of those bills, Connie incurred none of those bills. He was the parent, under this court's previous rulings, the parent has the exclusive right to collect those damages. And in this case, the parent is in court. And there's been no effort to join them. And the statute of limitations for them to recover those expired some 6 years before McCarney filed his complaint. So counsel has argued that the parents gave McCarney the right, but they can't give him a right any greater than that which they have. In this case, the right to recover the past medical expenses incurred while McCarney was a minor expired 6 years, at least 6 years before the complaint was filed. The future medical expenses, was there a clock somewhere? The future medical expenses were unsupported by any medical testimony at all, expert or otherwise. No physician appeared, no expert report was received, nothing. Now, in some cases, this court has said that you don't need an expert report. But in this case, the court has to remember, there have been 8 years with no treatment. So interpreting the records after 8 years of no treatment, I don't think you can infer from those records that he will require the standard that this court requires. He will require the future treatment. So it was inappropriate to allow the jury to consider and award future medical expenses. And in fact, the court had previously ordered that he could not because he didn't provide an adequate damages calculation. One thing, too, that I don't know if I have any time left.
You have 4 minutes or a little less than that. Do you wish to reserve any of that for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes. I'll wrap this up real quick. The one issue, too, is the big issue about providing whether or not we had to provide safety equipment. The problem that we have with what the court did, not only did the defendant present this issue to the judge to decide, Mr. Kurth presented the issue in summary judgment, cross motions for summary judgment. We said, Judge, is there a duty or isn't there a duty? We need to know because we didn't provide any medical, any safety equipment. The judge didn't rule. Instead, committed to the jury the obligation of figuring out whether a duty exists and what the parameters of that duty were. This was error. When the general verdict was entered, now we know there's half a dozen reasons, half a dozen inappropriate bases upon which the jury could have reached their decision. This court simply doesn't know on what basis it reached its decision, and therefore the decision is respectfully reversed.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Kirk.
Justices, may it please the court. This case is about a young man who was 11 years old at the time. He was playing in a required activity at a school. He was playing floor hockey. No rules were given out prior to the game. No rules were given to the parents to review. During the game, he was struck in his face by a stick. Suffered a severe injury, blunt force trauma to his left eye, hyphema. All this was presented as evidence. It was also presented as evidence that Woodbury did have rules at the time. Not just the Rice rules that Ms. Whelan, who testified later as the head of the risk, I believe the head of the risk management department, when before she was just investigating the claim, she found these other rules that were comparable and coincided. But the Woodbury rule was even limited, and they were introduced as evidence. The amount of number of players on each side, like say the six persons. So we're talking five, six persons on the side. And what the testimony presented, where substantial evidence was presented to the jury, is that the PE teacher, Mr. Peterson, would just split his class in half, or split it in four, and put them on the tennis courts, give them whoever, as many sticks as he had, they could just go play. And then they were playing with a tennis ball, they weren't playing with a rubber ball. I think that's important because what we argued in this case was, and what Judge Hardy found in the beginning was he determined what the duty was as a matter of law. To me, sometimes it's kind of difficult for me to parse it out. That's why you're here. I rely on that. But what he looked at is he said, okay, I'm going to say there's a ordinary, reasonable, prudent person standard. So did the school district increase the risk of harm? by what they did, which is what we would have to normally prove in a negligence case. Did they do something, you know, besides just having this activity in and of itself? And that's what was presented to the jury, and there were several instructions about it. I think what a large dispute here was, I think, the school district trying to bring in Turner, versus Mandalay case, and another Nahua case from California, but when I think that those cases aren't on point in this. I mean,
Turner versus Matt, wasn't that a spectator getting hit with a baseball?
Yes, it was, in the beer garden.
It was not somebody actually playing the sport.
Yes, Justice, and that's my understanding of that case, is that we have this limited Dewey rule, this primary implied assumption of risk rule, which is so that they can have these sporting events, they can have these recreational activities that somebody voluntarily participates in and assumes the risk. But when I go to a softball game for my daughter, I know I better watch out for the ball because those balls are always going everywhere, okay? And they have their own risk when they're voluntarily doing that. But this isn't that situation, and Judge Hardy determined that case was not on point. Now, I do think it's important, and I have one reason.
But there are risks that are inherent to sports. For example, if you're running on track, you can get tripped by another runner. That's inherent in track competition. So what's the standard?
I think the standard should be whether there was an ordinary, prudent, reasonable person standard, and whether they increased the risk. And not whether, I think it's difficult, when we're talking about inherent risk, and the whole argument a lot of the time was, what is the inherent risk doctrine? And I think it gets mixed up, that word, the wording and the phraseology, gets mixed up with this limited duty rule and primary implied assumption of risk, because if we're saying, well, on that one, they're saying, well, there's a risk inherent in going to a game because you get hit by a ball.
Or inherent in running a race or playing field hockey. You play field hockey with sticks. It would be hard not to.
Well, I think it would be hard not to usually get hit in the face with a stick, especially if they're using the appropriate equipment. And I think if we expand that limited duty rule to the school district, then you're pretty much giving them a carte blanche immunity from everything. I mean, they'll never be liable for anything. And they argue, well, that's how it should be because of this fiscal impact. Well, what about the fiscal impact on a low income or a regular person now paying for their health insurance and taking care of these medical bills that were happening through no fault of their own because somebody at the school district wasn't following the rules that they prepared and imposed themselves? So, and I only bring that up because I know sometimes, you know, part of the analysis is the fiscal impact. But I think that when you look at the Hemedy case, which I think we cited in California case, it really goes through and explains some of these things. Now that case didn't.
But that case was a golf club case with someone standing too close to a golfer, correct?
It was, but the supervisor did not make sure they were standing far enough apart. They weren't. Okay, we're here. We can hit some golf, you know, hit some golf balls. Well, they have a duty to do something too. And if we put this limited duty rule and apply to the school district, they wouldn't have any duty. They can just say, well, we decided that. This is in our curriculum. We're going to put it in our curriculum, so if somebody gets hurt, they get hurt. What about bike rodeo day? What about field day? And they set up something on a field day, and they used something that was more dangerous when they could have used something else. And if a child was hurt because of that reason, then do they have just, this was a recreational activity, it was a voluntary activity. I think that's why we got to be careful, because how we construe the law, because I think voluntariness is a large part of it, but I don't think the voluntariness should be the end-all be-all either. I think they still need to have a duty. There needs to be some kind of duty that's carved out and that's imposed.
Counsel, even if we find, say, there is a duty, your take on the past damages?
Okay. The damages, I believe, I know the school district cited this whole reverse call case, and I've argued, and I don't know how many motions and things I've had about that, but what I believe is, and what Judge Joe Hardy found, was that Arizona case, that what the intent of the legislature, what the intent of the court was not to have double recovery. Because how can we make a rule that says the parents have to sue for the medical expenses within 2 years of the injury when the kid is still treated? I mean, they could sue and then keep the case going on, obviously, in litigation, but then, say the child statute of limitations doesn't run until 2 years after they turn 18. I mean, those rules are incongruous with each other. I mean, it just doesn't work. I think the whole intent was the double recovery, and the court limited our damages as far as the future medical. So I think that McCarney was entitled to those damages because he incurred them. The parents did sue for it. He sued. There's not a double recovery that's happened. There was nothing against public policy with it. As far as the future damages go, we did decide, we did present evidence, and it was stipulated, medical records were stipulated in from Dr. Carr.
Did you, within the Dr. Carr information, did he provide an estimate, a guesstimate of what it might cost, or just the fact that there was a need for a crystal lens and cataract surgery in the future, possibly?
I don't believe an estimate of the cost was required. And to try to, and I'll tell you, when you're talking about expert witnesses in this case, when you're limited to $50,000, actually it subpoenaed Dr. Carr to come in, he didn't show up, but because he wanted, like, I don't know, an enormous amount of money to show up and testify in this case, and we're limited to $50,000 cap of damages.
So the answer, I guess, to my question is no, no dollar amount or estimate?
Yes, Justice Douglas, there was no dollar amount of estimate as far as that goes, but there was the estimate as far as what the previous surgery and the records for the jury to review to say what medical treatment was provided before and how much did it cost, so they could base their decision on that.
Was an argument made that they were the same surgeries or similar, or how was that?
I believe it was. I believe we did argue that they could see how much it would cost, and it would be an estimate of like $8,000 to $12,000. But I have to verify that in the record. But I'm sure that that was made.
Do you have a cite for the medical records in the appendix?
No, I do have
that. That you're relying on? But
yes, let me apologize.
Don't let me sidetrack you. I don't mean to.
No, I actually had it, but I thought I copied it and I don't have it in there. It's in Dr. Carr's record.
So you can give it that to us later because you're here.
Okay, it's when he saw him in 2015 is when it is. It's that record, and it's specifically set forth as Dr. Carr.
As to those past damages, was there any kind of attempt to assign by the parents or waiver by the parents or anything else?
There was no written assignment. You know, there was no written assignment that was done. But by them not proceeding, taking the position of pursuing, you know, compensation for that, I mean, that's still an assignment. I don't know that it, normally we want assignments to be in writing to be more enforceable, but I don't think we need the assignment. I think that we're just looking at not a double recovery, that he should still be entitled to receive those damages. And I think if the jury knew that there was no way that, if the ruling was he couldn't receive the damages, they would have gave him some other money somewhere else. How do we know that they didn't, or they wouldn't consider that? I mean, we did have the insurance instruction and, you know, several other instructions in there to guide. But, does that mean 5 minutes or 3 minutes?
Five.
Okay, thank you. Do you not sufficiently answer that, or is there, who knows, huh? Just an answer. So, I think we do, you know, I would like to see clarification myself and going through these different cases. I think it's fact intensive. I think that we have to look at each one. We have to get it to the jury and look at that part that the summary judgment shouldn't have been granted in this case in favor of the school district as they allege, and that medical expenses should be allowed.
If we find liability, what do we do with the images? Do we send it back for a damage trial without any recovery of actual medical expenses because the statute's wrong and no future? How do we write this?
I think that, I don't know that it can be. To me, it was pretty much was a damages. Well, it wasn't. It was a liability trial. But I think the damages were presented. I mean, we were limited on the damages. We specifically stipulated to, and the judge said that's what we could do to show what the medical bills were, and that medical summary was provided. So, and the damages, the court limited those damages to $50,000. We didn't appeal that. You know, we were pushing for the increase. But I think the court probably correctly determined that it applied as of, you know, in accordance with that Yeager-Dazian case, applied to the time of when the incident occurred. So I don't know, can you recover pain and suffering if you don't have medical damages as far as recovering medical damages, though? Confused is not how I would write it if I was writing it for, if I find liability, what do we do about damages? I think that was a problem, and I think after looking at the verdict form, that it, you know, might have created some of that issue as giving them the opportunity to just write in what those medical expense damages were. When they're determining, the instructions say to, you know, look at whatever, everything that's happened, what they went through, and the medical expenses. I guess there would have to be an instruction that would be allowed to say that the medical damages aren't going to be allowed, you know, if it was sent back, and just to determine what they think the impact of on McConney was and his pain and suffering.
His pain and suffering, he was awarded $2,000, is that correct, for his pain and suffering?
That's correct. That's what the verdict form said. It was surprising to me. But I think it was, like I said, in relation to the total amount of damages, which I know that the jury was deliberating about.
I know you have two more minutes remaining, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on whether there was error associated with not giving proposed instruction on, I think it was number 23, on...
Is that the sports setting one, or...?
Yes, the sports setting one.
Okay. That the sports setting instruction that was offered, you know, for one reason, I don't think it was... Maybe something else could have been allowed by Judge Hardy, but this one says specifically, a failure to provide safety equipment does not increase the risks associated with the game of field hockey. I mean, that was any instruction. How could the judge allow that? That's
if that sentence were taken out, would there be an infirmity in the instruction in your estimation?
There would be in this case, because I don't think that the limited duty rules should apply to this case. And I think that instruction is basically set forth and based on Turner, where it says the district cannot be held liable for injuries that are the results of conduct that is inherent in the sports activity being played. I think the difficulty is the word inherent. Now, an instruction about if the defendant must prove that the district increased the risk of harm, I don't think it should be unreasonably increased the risk of harm. I think it should be increased the risk of harm. An instruction like that, I believe, would be proper. But the instruction in total, I think, was completely improper. And the judge did right on that.
And not your job to rewrite it.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. We presented enough. If you look at all the negligence instructions that we presented, that the jury considered, I mean, they considered custom. I mean, they considered that just because an act happened, because it doesn't mean that it's the school district's fault. I think all those instructions covered and protected, you know, the defense, you know, which still put the burden on the plaintiff to prove the case and the liability. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time and your consideration this morning.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. O'Brien, you have just under 3 minutes to rebut.
Thank you, Your Honor.